Have you got it on there?
No, no, I'm going to use
it. It didn't. Something stalled it. Oh, it's stupid thing.
What I'm writing, but not what I'm saying.
Why? Oh, probably because we tried to press the flash on the web.
Oh, would that have stopped
it?
All those words are well. An incredible description from Chris.
Don't worry. Oh, I'll do it again sometime.
Yeah, he did it because he's recording.
Yeah, but the question, I mean, how's the. Like whoever's going to be seeing this video is going to get that impression of how you describe it, like, you know, the excitement of all, like, making
personal
the devices.
Connection.
Yes, well, I mean, you take all of this footage that we've carefully kind of planned in terms of capturing these intimate human moments, and like any filmmaking process, you crunch it down. So there's always, I think, as we were talking about on the phone, a ratio of what you shoot in terms of hours to the final film, and it's many tens of times to one, even higher often into the hundreds of times to one as it would be in a study like this. But what you end up with in any distillation process is something that's purer and more wonderful, in this case in storytelling terms, and engaging.
I mean, really, the process, the manual process inside the glove box is one that we can just do it, and it is the same process, and you know, we would only have to film a couple of days worth of that,
and
you wouldn't, you really wouldn't need to film that again and again and again. It's the although you're about to tell me that we want to film it again and again. I think talking to the camera in the lab about what you're doing today could then be used. You could apply the same footage. It doesn't look any different.
No, the only thing that filming every day gives you is if, as I think you pointed out, you
screw something up.
Yeah, and much as you don't want to publicise that, those are the moments of grit in this scientific process.
I kind of think we do want to publicise that.
That are good.
Because I kind of suspect that it'll add interest to the story.
Oh, it's
actually
definitely interesting. Adversity is one of the key parts of storytelling, and without adversity, a story is bland. And so the stakes go up every time a mistake is made here, because it's only that way that you appreciate, as a viewer, the complexity of the challenge. And that's what this exercise is.
Can't experience with adversity, things not working right.
I mean, that's 90% of the time things are not going right, and that's what real science is, actually.
So maybe you need to film it more, you know, a small number of times, not hundreds of times, but maybe three or four times, just to be able to have a sort of range of reactions. Because I think I mentioned on the phone this Destination Titan film that I produced with a team last year for BBC Two, and we had all this video diary material for that, following these students through their trials and tribulations of building this robot to go to this moon of Saturn, Titan. And it was only the moments when things went wrong that we were in the film in the end, because the other stuff wasn't interesting, actually, because it didn't demonstrate anything. You know, when things go right, you don't learn anything, the adversity's gone, and the blandness of a story kind of kicks in, and that's what you want to avoid. And so in capturing this, it's exactly all of those moments of difficulty that you want to bring it into, to illustrate really how hard your challenge is. It's miraculous what you're doing here, you know.
There's a fantastic film last year, I'm going to forget all the details, so don't ask me to tell you, but you probably know about the story of the Canadian team who created a unique meteorological balloon. It took, I think, 2.5 years to assemble all the components and this was, I don't know, meteorological balloon, it was actually, it was an astronaut balloon, wasn't it? Some sort of new optical telescope, I think. It was balloon mounted. Do you remember this?
No, it went up to the stratosphere.
Anyway, the point is that this film beautifully traces every meticulous aspect of the process of putting all this together. And it was actually their second attempt. The first attempt had been destroyed. Mm. And of course, the culmination of the film is it gets destroyed again at that final moment when they finally pull it together. But even if you don't know that's what's going to happen, once it finally does happen, everything else you've learned along the way actually feels even more, intense and more clear because of the realisation of, you know, why that effort was so important and how much has been lost in that moment. So it really can all open up more than success can sometimes.
It's about communicating the effort, I think, with this, which is completely overlooked by the people that you'd like to engage in this as a wider audience. I think we all take this stuff for granted.
It's a process, you know, that it's a human process. You know, that there are human judgments that have to be made, and there are foibles along the way. And,
Are you feeling very special now, Jose?
I guess the first time I made those, I think the learning process probably 2 weeks once you started doing that. I think you're gonna have to go through that eventually.
I would love to do that, actually. I think this in itself is a very funny micro film, the social scientist in the world of physical science. Mm. I'm going to be so clumsy.
Are you going to learn to do this, then?
That's really
yes, I think so, because brilliant. Otherwise I can't really explain it to the participants. I have to know.
Oh, brilliant. What a lovely thing to be able to capture, you know, because I'd imagine it's not easy, and you're going to make mistakes.
There's going to be a lot of swearing, probably in Polish.
What's quite interesting from my point of view is, when I taught some undergraduates to make devices over the summer, and it took 2 weeks, and actually they were quite good at making devices, but they hadn't got a clue what they were building. Well, they kind of knew what they were building, but they didn't really understand any of the steps. So you can actually make this stuff without really having any understanding of what it is. And this is another important thing about technology, is that sometimes technologies are created where there isn't really a proper scientific understanding of how they work.
Well, it's like cooking. I mean, you put a recipe together, it's temperature, but you don't really know like the chemistry that happens there. Sure. So. But it works at the end.
As long as you can repeat it, you've got something valuable. But if you can't repeat it, then it's not valuable. Yeah. So actually, it's got nothing to do with science as to whether it's valuable or not. It's,
you see, I think these points you're making are best done, to answer your question as well, Jose, in storytelling terms, as a later interview that you then can... Mm. These are philosophical points about the process, aren't they, that knit all of this together in a wonderfully human way, and they're best captured afterwards during the years that this unfolds, but then edited together as a retrospective comment. That's classic documentary stuff, and you might shy away from that in the end as a style, but that's what I'd sort of suggest, as thinking out loud, because the philosophy is important here as well, and that's often the hardest thing to tease out of just a moment of actuality. You won't get a deep philosophical thought necessarily from that, although if you're doing it and you look up at the camera and something comes to mind, you might want to say it then, but...
Really, well, I think we were hoping to have a camera in the lab where you could talk, because there's quite a lot of time as well in making... Mm. You're spending quite a lot of time just sitting around, and there is time to talk to
the cameras. Well, we should definitely...
Could be sort of almost like a Big Brother, I don't know.
Diary room.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was thinking.
Big Brother, but yeah, like a diary room. Or a video box in the old terminology.
Well, I think the good thing about isolating it from your peers is you can be more honest and open, and maybe that's an important element for you, honesty here, without it generating into a bitchy nag. But I mean, honest about how you're feeling about the process, and that could be valuable material as well. In a closet somewhere with a... Mm.
I think ideally we'd set up kind of a lab video diary camera and one in an office somewhere that we could that we could talk to.
Mm.
And then if we mount something in the glove box, then that to me sounds like it ought to really be enough for the static cameras, because we don't want to overload ourselves with static cameras that we have to talk to all the time.
Alex said, but for the diaries, we actually need like a video, just like a recorder. I don't know, like by the time when you go home and you're just unwinding, just, I don't know, say like, I know, for 5 minutes and whatever happened throughout the day, whether you accomplish a task.
Well, if we want to use it in a film, then yes, we need video. I think that's a short of it. But if it's not, like, we shouldn't also be fixated on the video, because it can kill the process.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really don't want to talk to the video, just don't do it.
Some people won't want to, you know, because how many people are we talking about bringing in, how many individuals? I mean, you mentioned a couple of...
Yeah, okay, so there's a core, and then there's a more of a periphery, and I think we might well meet the periphery at the kind of monthly meetings where we could...
And these going to be architects as well? I mean,
No, he's not. It's a lady called Prue Childs.
That's the kind of monthly meetings that
mentioned,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And there are sub-projects as well, which are kind of what we're talking... Spoken about to start with, really, is the core, but there are sub-projects. There are other technological elements that we can throw into the participatory research mix. Kind of, these engineers are kind of able to design systems which might include battery storage or...
So that's Dave and Martin.
Yeah, or the wiring up of multiple cells to make a kind of pseudo panel.
Yeah.
But
and
the
then
core,
there's... Or there's a geographical split there as well, isn't there? Because we've got the PhD student who is going to be doing a lot of work in Bangladesh, which is Rayana, who is from Bangladesh. And I'm not sure whether I'm going to go with her or I'm going to be supervising her remotely from the UK. I mean, thought of that. Well, in the fieldwork in the UK, that will be Matt, who's not here at the moment, who's the other social scientist, Nikki and I, but me probably most hands-on, and hopefully Jose as well.
Okay. I mean, the best way I think of planning is to take that list and the details of the scenes that unfold that you would all be involved in, whether it's here in the labs we've just talked about with the glove box, or I think in one of the other projects there'd be an equivalent example of that in terms of a space we'd need to kind of wire audio-visually to best capture the action. And then, of course, in the field. And the exercise is just thinking through in the field the environment you'll be working in. Will you be working roofs? You need to get to know the family that's going to be feeding back their sort of participant data. You obviously need to negotiate with them the camera access, and the video diary mechanism can extend into that environment if they're comfortable with that. And those answers to all of those questions dictate the cameras and where you place them. And sound is more important than pictures here.
Yeah.
It's always the thing that you let down on. And so that the microphone placement also needs careful planning. That's the exercise I think we need to do, which we've started here with this lovely illustration.
And so Chris fantastically set out this very exciting end-to-end story relevant to this project. Can you envisage parallel
on the other
stories
three,
on the other three projects?
I think the project in Lancaster very much so. The other two projects, possibly less so. One of them, because I think you'll find it, they'll be more difficult to engage, the project run by Southampton. And in Bristol, I think it's maybe a little bit more... Well, yeah, I mean, the idea would be to try and create parallels, but I suspect we'll possibly be more committed, although I wouldn't like to speak for John Whittle in Lancaster.
Mm.
So his is computer science, design of social media, basically, to enact change.
Yeah.
Bring down the next country.
Really?
Kind of, yeah. Right. So that could be really quite exciting.
Wow. Going to do a field study in somewhere in the...
Well, I don't know.
It's a Arab Spring sort of territory.
Well, he cited that. I mean, I'm probably bigging it up a bit, but he did cite that. Yeah, make Facebook more appropriate for bringing
more powerful for demolishing dictators.
Yeah.
Gosh, fantastic.
What will be the field test then? Mobile phones on a potentially volatile space.
Just flood Zimbabwe with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he can possibly get that through ethics, but
no one needs to know.
But yeah, no, I think he would really quite like to do something.
Well, wow. Does the, in terms of how you spend this accumulated
money, okay.
You've got, though, does it have to be distributed evenly across all the projects?
No, I don't think so, because we'd be funding the majority and we'd be taking a small amount from each of the other projects.
That's quite heartening, because I have to say, just in terms of this half-hour discussion you've just had between you just now, there's enough there, I think, frankly, to more than use that whole budget if you wanted to, but obviously you can't. So.
And I would like to try and find more funding, and I think that because there's the widening participation agenda across the whole of the UK, and Sheffield has committed to spending 10% of its income from students in 2012 and onwards to that, and because of the groups that we're working with in the field, I think that we should be able to leverage some more funds.
Did you have a response from Tony?
No, I didn't. I haven't spoken to him about it. I think that he'll be more than happy to support it, but we need a kind of clear plan of action before I go to him. I think that in 6 months' time, I certainly think we'd be able to leverage more funds.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry. I'm not too worried about burning through the cash and then having to try and find a bit more.
Mm.
And there's, and I think if it obviously needs to be phased. We need to set up and purchase the initial training and facilitation of us to be able to record our footage, then we need to think about the next phase, which is and a parallel to that, how to archive it, and then following that, what films we're going to actually make with which audiences.
And that's an important point. You know, you probably need to make an early decision about whether the purpose is archiving's sake, or whether it is to have some sort of front end that allows you to showcase the material as you go. Because the solutions could be quite different.
Well, I think in terms of pure archiving, if this grid solution comes off, then I think we're okay for that.
Yeah.
Although we'd need to hire someone quite experienced to set that up for us, and I think we're planning to do that.
Yeah.
Although how searchable would it be just by plonking it on that big server? I mean, would you not still need some sort of mechanism to curation?
Well, we'd need some
curation exactly in order to tag it all as you go?
I think that would be the... Is Helen in a good position to be able to do that, do you think?
Definitely. Yeah. But it's another social scientist who could be employed on a part-time contract to do that, basically, for the first few months at least.
At least the first few months.
Could you put a footage vault-type infrastructure on top of the material if it's sitting on that big server?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Over the last half a decade or so, we took the entire NASA film archive, all going back to 1958, 10,000 hours of it, and... just film footage and published it all online.
I think I might have seen it.
Footage Vault.
All one word, VAULT.
That's for NASA?
So far, we've just white labelled it actually for other collections, and so we've got a couple of other filmmakers that, if you just type into the search engine Apollo, just the word Apollo, that would give you a good example. Two L's.
Oh, yeah.
Found it anyway. I think there's almost 3,000 Apollo clips up there, which amount to the bulk of that 10,000 hours of 16.
The point is, you can view the material straight away, albeit it's lightly watermarked. But look at the unprecedented amount of meta tagging you've got. I mean, these guys have done an amazing job. The historical context, the technical detail.
Yeah, so there's a number of fields in the back end that we've built to add all of the... This is the technical data about the clip, so the format it's in, that's not so relevant to this project. There's detailed descriptions of the shot from
That'd be great. Photographic perspective. Really cool.
So that's a ready-to-go infrastructure that we have, which, as Chris said, has now been white-labelled to make available to any collection.
And so our footage could be stored on this... national cluster, and then this could be the front end.
Yeah. I don't see why not. We'd have to talk to our coder specifically about the logistics of that, but I don't see any reason why not. I mean, this is running off a server in Docklands at the moment, and we've just put it on there. Yeah. And there's a back end to it, which is not ready for public consumption, but given the context that this is an academic one, it's perfectly usable. There's something like 28 fields, and you just click on the field, add your data and click out again, and it saves it.
So there's basically a database and then a file structure.
Exactly.
Cross-reference.
And importantly also, and every clip is a different resolution, so you've got the full res versions and you've got these M4Vs.
Actually. I mean, that's more complicated because it's manual rather than automated. But no, I think you'd be capturing stuff at full res and just storing it at full resolution rather than sort of subsampling it, wouldn't you here?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that clip's playing at a reduced MPEG format, but the broadcast quality file for a five-minute clip there is probably 4 or 5 gig, which would take more like an hour to download or something. Mm.
Mm. There's about 10,000 clips on it.
Something like that, yeah, we're still...
And how does this work with... I mean, audio, I can see this working.
It will play audio as well.
But what about other types of data?
So it's bespoke specifically for video files, this, but actually you can tag the metadata onto any media artifact. So a still, for example, would work in it. I think you close that window, it will have opened it in a new one, so if you close that window, the other one will... not the browser, sorry. For example, as part of this process, we get the film clip, the video clip, and we generate stills. If you did that search again, you'll see the thumbnails that come up are all JPEG stills from a grab from part of the video. So these are all just stills that we captured.
If you scroll down, you see there's a full page of that sort of...
There'll be thousands of, hundreds of pages of that. That's one of how many pages? 150. It just says it's 50.
And the only reason that clip you just saw didn't have any audio is because it doesn't have any audio, but there's lots of clips on there that do have audio, and they'll play
audio. Yeah, that's an example. Well, it's quite a historic one.
I haven't seen that before somewhere.
Theorists something to do then?
Well, they're never far away, are they, the lunar conspiracy theorists? But they just amuse me rather than irritate me. They're all bonkers, aren't they?
Yeah, I watched Brian Cox last night, and it started to get interesting when he started talking to the guy in the States.
Gene Cernan,
it's fascinating to hear.
I've interviewed him too, he's an extraordinary guy.
There's another approach. I mean, people just fit the bill in many ways, but just we mentioned last time another website which you might just want to have a quick look at called Our Space, which was this was a kids focused thing, but the underlying architecture.
Our space.
our-space.org. Is that the right one? There's lots of different things called. No, that's Our Space Place. Our-space.org. That's the second one. So this was developed for kids to find material that's relevant to human spaceflight, and this particular chap in the International Space Station, and then mash it up into their own sort of versions of his story. So it was a competition that we ran, and there were all sorts of other dimensions to it. So if you just click on any one of these clips, it will give you a flavour of how this works. So this is how the site is built. So it's built around a video, but if you scroll down a bit, what you'll see is each video has associated with it lots of other material. So every video is available in its fully edited form, in its raw form, so just the footage, or just without music and sound effects and all the rest of it. You've got it in multiple formats, so it's, you know, WMVs, or it's got mods depending on what's relevant to you, so you can actually, you know, download it rather than just streaming it. Then you've got associated clips, so other material that's relevant to the subject matter he's talking about, which could be video, which could be audio. You've got science explanations, you've got, you know, but the point is you can have research papers, you could have, you know, an information sheet, whatever you like. Mm-hmm. And then you navigate it in multiple different routes. So at the top level, you've got themes. So if you actually go up a bit, you'll see. If you click on materials at the top there, the big tab at the top, this is materials. Oh, yeah, you can see the themes there, but... So it sort of arranges in terms of things. And then down the right, you've got curriculum topics. I think there's a mixture of curriculum topics and science topics. But then there's sort of two or three additional layers you can have in of types of navigation that are relevant to your audience. And so the look and feel of that is obviously very kids-focused. But the underlying architecture can just be incredibly easily reskinned. In fact, we are in the process of reskinning it for a university project at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all CMS-based, so the content management system is learning in about 10 minutes how to use it. And you literally just, you know, upload material, move it around on the page, you know, add whatever content you want to. Plus you can put a blog on top of it, that you were talking about this.
Yeah.
And you can password protect certain areas and so on and so on and so on. So two different approaches there, which I think could both serve as a useful front end.
The challenge in all of this, when you're feeding the data live to it, and your big difficulty, I suppose, is managing this flow of media from potentially multiple devices, including, you know, phones too, and personal devices. Somebody might be moved to say something at a point when they're not in the lab, but they'll record it on their phone. And you want to somehow come up with a workflow that channels everything into this, so media doesn't get lost. But importantly, at the point it's entered, it's also tagged. Otherwise, it's as
good
as lost.
Yeah, do you know what I'm realising, actually? In many ways, these two things are complementary, because in a sense, the footage vault approach is just the kind of routine platform that should be used to just make sure all the material is curated, is tagged, is tucked away on that server, kept for posterity for ethnographic purposes, and is just there routinely. But the person who's doing that curation, could also be simultaneously keeping an eye on material that could be usefully showcased on an ongoing basis to build up a collection that is perhaps public-facing, which could then go into something that's more like that's mm-hmm. designed for a public audience rather than just for archiving purposes. So that this becomes a relatively...
Well, could it be the same database that sits behind the two front ends?
Yeah, quite probably, yeah. I don't see why not. And the point is you've just got, you know, you're behind-the-scenes archive, and then you've got something that's a more focused public engagement tool. Ever evolving, and then that too could also be used, in fact, as a way to inform. Maybe that's overstretching it a bit, but you know, in terms of editorial choices around an actual film to be made, you could almost even sort of track what sort of material people are tapping into, what they're using, what they're downloading,
mm-hmm.
And that could even inform, you know, well, not just editorial choices about a film, but also indeed your own work around.
That's true.
What it is that's grabbing people's attention.
Yeah, if we could integrate that with the project website.
Yeah.
That would
be really nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, Well, in a sense, you could add additional.
I mean, this could be our project website.
Absolutely. In fact, for example, if you go into the About section or the Competition section, you'll see that there are certain pages that are not video-led. That's not a good example. I mean, there's sort of sub-tabs. If you go, for example... Yeah, what are you saying?
Yeah, I know, it's fine. I can see that this could be our web... Mm. Our website where a lot of the material on there is actually a few different videos, and some of those would actually be shot for purpose, and some would be just stuff
that happens
to be curated during the project.
Yeah.
Okay, so ideally, what we'd want to set up is that the storage was on this grid computing network, so that we could have it archived. Well, it's probably everything goes into the same database.
Mm.
It becomes curated and then becomes material that's available for either of these websites. I need to check with the grid administration that stuff can go directly to web, because we don't want to store it twice.
Yeah.
I think there are, they talked about tools that can do that. There are issues over the certificate. So the way that this national grid computing thing works is that you have a browser that has a certificate associated with it, which can then view the data. So you upload and download data from a browser like Firefox or something.
Yes.
So we'd need to make sure that it can go to any website. But I'm sure that there must be tools to do that, even if they're not the upload and download tools, that they can be the view tools.
Yeah.
And
it might actually be worth getting your grid people to talk to one of our developers and
that's true.
I'm sure the answers are probably easy for
set them. Set up a conference call about that.
Yeah.
Probably
sort it out in 5 minutes.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember what, I think FootageVault's coded in principally in PHP.
Right.
And it's a Unix, I think it's a Unix server, rather than a Microsoft server.
This is also Unix. What it's coded in, I don't know. Not to ask.
Almost certainly the grid thing will be all Unix.
Yeah. Oh, well, that probably is simple then.
Some of this, get it wrong.
And that we would then still have control of the underlying databases as part of this academic grid computing system, and that we would basically place orders to put together these front ends.
Yeah, you curate it. I mean, I think the licensing for the FootageVault code resides with FootageVault, and we're just white labelling it and licensing it to people. In that case, I don't know what the deal is with...
So we would still be administrating...
Both things are potentially totally self-manageable by you. I think what we would do is effectively set up the infrastructure to make sure it can work with the grid thing.
Yeah.
Potentially reskin the front of FootageVault to make it relevant to your project. And then the same with this. You wouldn't need to commission this each time you want to put more content on that. You would do that entirely yourself with the content management system. Which I can actually show you quickly, just like probably not done it, but all the details. But you only literally.
So we would own it at the end. The problem is that we don't want something at the end of the project that then is we don't own, basically.
No,
it's all the data would be yours, and the way of viewing it would be.
At the point of commissioning this website, so as your front end version, again, we would do the same process. We would perhaps slightly tweak the underlying content management system so that it's tailored for your need, design a front end. That's your own branding on it, whatever the project branding on it. And then really it's over to you. We'd possibly seed the content, the initial content.
And how much are we talking about in terms of setting up these different websites?
like a builder.
No, I mean, we're talking...
I don't know. I have to go and talk to our developers to get precise figures. But not, we're talking a few thousand quid.
Yeah, that's
under 10.
Yeah.
For FootageVault, it's a different story, I think, because it's not really a tried and tested process for FootageVault, in the sense it's
a new thing
that it's white-labeled, But at the same time, the advantage is you don't have a major sort of front-end need, it's a functional.
It's there already, we don't need to change.
Right, it's just you've got to change the branding, it's nice.
You don't necessarily
white.
Even need to change the
it's
branding.
It's a white website, so not much to do, so it's relatively...
Yeah, I mean the CMS, the back end interface is a bit cruder than the one was designed for lay people to use. You need to be a bit more sort of computer savvy to do the current one. But that can be
that's a training issue as well. Probably spending a day with
introduce you to it really.
Yeah.
Do you want to quickly? I'll quickly show you the back end. Just need to find the login details.
And as of October, we we have a computer whiz come back onto the project, so...
Okay.
I don't want to make her full-time job sorting this stuff out, but she wouldn't be any... Yeah, it would be no problem at all.
I mean, from my experience of curating any of this, and I was the principal curator of Fidgetville for quite a while, it's time-consuming doing it, and it's not to be underestimated.
No, I think we realised
that. That's why we were... another person, not to be on top of somebody else.
Yeah, you need a part-time curator that every day they're...
Yeah, I'm seeing that system administration and curation are two potentially different functions.
Potentially. I mean, one of them you've just got to be really anal about kind of curation issues, you know, and metadata, a real metadata expert. Because this whole body of data that you're creating here is only as valuable as the metadata.
No, I completely realise that. It needs to be more than one day a week, I would have thought, as well. I mean, trying to find some funding from you.
But think of it more as a kind of webmaster role rather than a technical role.
I think a social science... It sounds like a social science is absolutely perfect for this.
Yes. Well, I don't know. Would it be more than one day a week if it's 2 hours a day?
Ideally, we have 2 months to start with and then we see how it goes. There is a day a week in the budget. Do we need to transfer other funds onto that? That's the question, really. If it's a day a week, that's fantastic. That would be brilliant, but I suspect it would take longer than that.
I mean, ideally, with a lot of the footage we've talked about, the spoken word is still really important here because it's part of what's unfolding and thoughts and feelings and actuality, as it were, as well. And so transcription is a big part of this too. Now that, to some extent, can be outsourced quite easily to other parts of the world these days, in that you export just the audio file. They're very small. They can be easily sent, even attached to emails and things, even for hours of audio. Someone transcribes it overnight in the Far East and sends it back, and you then curate that as part of the metadata associated with that clip. But without the transcriptions, it's hard to search.
So let me show you. So basically, you can navigate the site from the front end. So you can actually just go anywhere you want on the website, visually, and then you just choose to edit that page.
You're live now, editing it live.
Exactly. I am doing. I'm going exactly what I'm going to do. And so all I have to do, quite literally, I want to change the order of. So these are sections within this particular page. You can go in there, and it will show you all the various blocks. So there's a bit of text, bit of the video. This is a video upload mechanism. All you literally do is just click on that, and it will ask you, give you a browse box, and you just navigate to where you want to select it from, and hey presto. And then if you want to move items around on the page within the format of that particular page, you literally just browse. Probably not a good example of that one. Okay, to the media. You literally just grab a block and just drag it,
right,
change the order, and that will change how that appears. And you can preview that. I don't know what I've just buggered up.
Well, that was the worry.
Well, I haven't published yet, yeah. So it's literally just preview what you've done.
It's like Wikipedia in that respect.
Yeah, exactly. So I've just pushed the video up the page, and then all you've got to do is publish, and it'll give you a list of the items that you've changed, and choose which ones you want to, yeah. And that's it. I've just given you training on the CMS.
No, I think that looks... Well, it's easier than WordPress, so...
I've just got to change that back.
I can see what you're saying about transcription, Chris, and that will become more of an issue once we are actually engaging with publics, but I think, because until that point, all the key communications will be happening on the meetings and to the web camera or to the lab camera. And we would be doing transcription anyway at that stage, I should think.
Would you?
So,
okay.
Because
what's that? It's part of social science methodology anyway, isn't it, in the way that,
usually we, unfortunately, time constraints prevent us from doing our own transcription, which is better as an analysis method as well. But
it is time consuming.
But we'd be doing that anyway, so that could be also available then for the, at least it could be stored in the archive, the question of whether that could be made available on the web is different, because that's the ethics agreement that we would need to have with...
But could
you need to carry around a consent form around it all the time?
But
that's
that footage vault could all be password protected, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's internal. Yeah, that could just be internal for the project.
Yeah.
And at the point where we decide what we're going to publish, we use this site.
And
to
even
do
within
that,
you site, can, even with that site, you can password protect certain sections so that, you know, if there's a particular audience you want to engage with, you know, maybe a particular school who you want to share particular material because the teacher said they're doing that this term, you know, you can have an area that's for their purposes, but not publicly.
I mean, your curator is the gatekeeper for that, and if, you know, because there will be swearing, as we've talked about on it, which is important, you mustn't try and filter that, edit it out in some way, it's part of the capture, but you might not necessarily want to make that available to all schools out there, you know.
It's just good to mention, another thing about that site that's very relevant to this is that, I didn't show you on there, but because it was designed for space missions, it's actually structured in terms of missions, which can actually be very relevant to, you know, the four parallel strands. You effectively have four parallel websites on one website, as well as having one overarching front end.
That's a nice idea, if they're on board.
If they're on board,
What's the commonality between all four of you? Because they're totally different projects, aren't
they? They're all the projects at the science, social science interface.
I see, simply that.
But actually, they're understood very differently.
But yeah, in reality, one is about mobile application tools for healthcare intervention. One is about enabling people to throw down governments, and another one is about how understanding decision making. So you would actually, two of those are basically computers, social science, computer science. One is psychology,
yes,
pure and simple, and ours is actually material science.
Material science, yeah.
Decision making one sounds a lot like AI democracy, by the way, from what I've read. We had a project called AI Democracy a couple of years ago, which was using neural networks to analyse corporate and political decision making. But in fact, and also public attitudes.
So they're all quite different, but they wouldn't necessarily normally be a, when you say what's science, those things wouldn't necessarily come to mind, and I think that's where there's a commonality in terms of being able to communicate different types of science.
Yeah. Mm. You see, I mean, it might be that they all require slightly different approaches to their data capture, and that the wonderful thing, and it's nice to perhaps start with this, is that what you're talking about is very, very visual in a way. You know, you've got these products physically, because it's material science, you've got all of that wonderful kind of gift of being able to film with your participants and the kind that comes with that visually. Mm. With the others, you know, I'm thinking aloud here, but I mean, maybe the Lancaster one, a Facebook timeline is more appropriate as a kind of method of capture there, you know. Obviously, it's very public, and you might still want to kind of put it behind a firewall or something initially, but do you see what I mean? It could be that it's a different media, it's a social media project, so it's a different approach to capturing it.
I think if we were to set up training to start with, it would be on how to film within your groups. So we would, to start, the first thing we can order from you is a training session on filming.
On documentary making, a kind of 101 sort of thing, documenting yourself visually. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the technical aspects of that are really the key thing that we want to get hold of, is what equipment, how, where, what's important to consider, so we don't screw it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And we'd want to get that set up pretty soon, and that would involve all four of the projects. So people would, I don't know, I'd propose Sheffield, but that's because that we'd actually set up a kind of 1 or 2 day workshop on that, I guess.
Sure.
So certainly something you should inform Tony Ryan about when we do that.
Yeah.
Something he was keen to.
No, and I will, and that may well be already a way to leverage, or a mechanism to leverage future funds, even if he.
There was a plan to set up a science communication.
No, it is happening. I've already talked on it.
Have you? Oh.
Not that I know anything about science communication, but
who's leading it?
It's a guy from Alan Pacey.
Alan Pacey, I've heard of him.
Right, so he does.
I think he works already with some colleagues of mine at Imperial College.
Which does the Imperial course, and
Gareth and Robert Sternberg, who's the film director there at Imperial. Instance, and I think they come up here to Sheffield. They were doing it a few weeks ago.
So that's biomedical sciences, I think.
Is it through Alan? Yeah.
So I'm trying to get a couple of those students to buy into this project as their dissertation.
It's a good idea.
Because we'll get an extra couple of pairs of hands.
Yes. Well, that's going to be welcome, I think.
But that's not going to survive us past kind of August. But then I wonder whether there's other mechanisms by which we could take one of them and get them some KTP knowledge transfer partnership funding so that they could actually work for you but be funded partly by the KTP, and that would give them a career option and also subsidise the project. So there are, I think there are plenty of ways to get extra funding actually.
I'd be very keen to explore that, because we've been looking at the idea of KTP at the university anyway.
Have you?
To start that. Well, we're kind of going to have several KTPs actually with various universities, which haven't been obviously supposed to start, because...
Well, if we could get hooked one of, there's one particular student who's really good that I'd quite like to get him to buy into a dissertation and then get him to sign up to a kind of two-year KTP following that. That'd, I mean, it's a career goal for him. I mean, he's only coming out of his undergraduate degree and he wants to get into broadcast media, then, you know, this is an opportunity for him. So
definitely very interested in that.
Right, that sounds good. Because that would then leverage extra funding. It would be on this project, it would be an extra pair of hands, and it would be subsidised by... So that's the sort of thing.
Okay, so...
But that doesn't even go near the widening participation pot of money. I'm sure we get something out of that. But we don't want to dilute what we're doing, but we want to get a hold of extra money. So we need to be a little bit careful not to add in extra stuff onto the project. But
So the media training is an important first step.
Yeah, definitely,
The second one you mentioned was the logistics of sort of capturing it, if you like. So a good group recce of the lab, of the space where most of your actions will be unfolding is valuable there.
And it may be, well, we have to do 2 days of all four projects and then a day of just our project, and then the other projects would be over and a day of just their project.
Yeah, because they'll be all on site.
Yeah, well, you'd want to go to different sites. And
You'd have to,
We can work out the detail and come back to you with some thoughts on that. What about cameras? I mean, if we advise you on cameras...
Then we'd PO them, I guess, unless it's cheaper to go through you and we'd buy them through you. But we're going to have...
Yeah, the only element that makes it cheaper would be that, we do have... and so on, but
we'd only be able to buy through certain accredited suppliers to start
that's
with,
the problem, isn't it?
Which might stop us a little bit. So then we may be.
It's really I suspect it would be easier just to avoid. We can certainly advise.
Because if are you thinking of buying for all four sites together to negotiate a bigger discount?
Yeah, we
basically.
Might get a discount.
Might be the sensible thing to do.
Yeah.
Work out how many.
Depends what the other sites need. They might have
They might do.
I don't really want to complicate it, but I know that I'm going to have to bring in the other projects to get some of their...
We start at a certain level, and then you know they have additional requirements and build up.
There's another project I'm involved in to chart over a year or more cancer patients actually through University of Westminster, and they're trying to procure 10 cameras at the moment, and so it could be they're very similar requirements actually because of the video diary element to it.
How are we talking? A few hundred quid each?
Basically. But you know, the more you want to buy, the cheaper it will be, and so maybe there's a way of rolling that. And I already offered.
And we'll be talking about solid state stuff, so these are SD cards or whatever to make it as straightforward.
But there's a big funnel we should design here in terms of bringing in media from many different sources, as I say, from an iPad to a phone to the cameras that you want to invest in, and that does need some careful further planning.
I would say in terms of working out, if you do want to have a Photoshop type archive, that's not necessarily going to be a very an instant process.
No,
it needs some working through. And working
but
out,
we need our own internal archive in the short term anyway. Then which could, if it's this grid that system, then we just need to be put a metadata database. That's similar to if we can see what the database is, we can set that up on MySQL or something and have a database sat next to what we're doing and reference it.
Yes.
The file system and that. I mean, I don't quite like the database.
A setup that then is difficult to then unpick.
No.
When you put the Photoshop front end on, but...
The reverse engineering is always fiddly, but I think it's SQL based as well. I need to talk to John about that. The other thing we probably run out of time to do today, but which needs some further thought, I think, because we've sort of gone down the route a bit, is taking this enormous volume and crunching it down into the most useful way to share more widely. And the obvious thing is obviously you end up with one lovely film that you can share that tells the whole story, at the end of 3 years' time or something like that. But along the way, there's other smaller films to be made, of course. And even as Ravi sort of hinted at, making the colossal database more publicly accessible in a metered way, the challenge there is who realistically is going to trawl through 2 hours of lab work for that bleeped moment when the thing went out? Is it really of public engagement value to do that sort of unfettered, or does it need a more kind of careful
what
plan?
What it sounds like to me is that if you've got a mechanism to allow you to curate and tag the material on an ongoing basis that has enough front end to it that allows you to share that with other institutions, other colleagues, other social scientists perhaps,
mm-hmm.
something like the village role type approach, that's enough for now. It doesn't need to be any more public facing than that. Then you've got this sort of approach for the occasional material that you want to showcase, which is dealing with another sort of issue. But then, you know, the question Chris is raising is something you don't have to really address until the end of the project, you know. If there's a desire to have a legacy that allows public access to the material in the future, but you're concerned about there being too much and no one's ever going to look at it, then make that decision then. And you can sort of perhaps create a sort of halfway house solution that takes the best of both approaches at that point. You know, it doesn't need something to be decided now.
I think it's actually quite important that we just get on with the job of recording stuff,
exactly.
Figure out a sensible way to store it in the short term, and then
The other thing that we were talking about yesterday with Nikki was the employment of an ethnographer that would actually do an ethnography of us, and whether that would be an actual filmmaker or somebody else.
Yeah.
We have not.
That's an interesting point, because I was assuming that's part of your plan anyway.
It is, but actually how much of that is included within the budget that we have. John Whittle from Lancaster was going to look into bringing in someone to look at, do ethnography on the three, four different projects.
Mm.
So there may well be an extra little bit of money there to incorporate filmmaking. But he hasn't reported back, so I don't really know. So all I can really do is go ahead with us recording as much stuff as we can in a sensible way.
Yeah.
Which will give us a certain level of this ethnography, but it won't necessarily be analysed in its full potential.
No, but hopefully that ongoing analysis and ongoing editing that we've been talking about would be part of a remit of an archiver, of a curator, and this is how we manage this, basically.
If at the moment we've only got one day a week and it actually takes 3 days a week to do it properly, then we need to find the funding for those 3 days a week.
Do you want us actually to come back to you with some figures?
Yeah, I need to know some budgetary rights, I need to know some...
For everything, so for the media training, for both of these websites? Okay, and then, but in terms of actual a film, doesn't sound like quite at the point...
No, probably not, but some ideas of different lengths of films.
Would it be useful to know sort of what maybe...
Daily rate in terms of the professional filming of the meeting.
So
exactly.
Right, you're going to have a monthly couple of days of professional filming, whatever
because
it is.
The next studio session is coming up
in
the next
few
weeks,
and
I would really, really, really like a professional group of filmmakers.
In the next couple of weeks,
meeting, your monthly meetings,
Well, actually, this is a different, this is a sub-project, which when we go and talk to the architects, there's 10 architect students who are designing a neighbourhood, and we hope to incorporate some of the kind of ideas of laboratory research into that PV neighbourhood, so it ends up being a model which demonstrates solar and neighbourhoods and energy and power. So
something that also we can hopefully use in our participation in the field. So it's a very useful for the architects, because the architecture students get this superb nice thing to work with and new ideas, etc.
Yes.
It's good for us. Well, initially it was thought of as a team building exercise nearly, because it brought together engineers, and engineers could get something out of it, and social scientists could get something out of it. It was a very collaborative thing to do. But now it is going to spin. That's even though it's a side project, it will continue because architecture is very much on board with this for this to be part of the curriculum of our students over the next many years.
Yeah, we kind of want to film that next meeting, really, quite importantly.
So these students will be engaging directly with users and listening to their...
What these students are going to make is a physical model of a neighbourhood which is powered by solar power, and then we're going to hopefully take that model, which should be a huge thing, and use it in order to engage our end kind of participants, whether it is... whether we use it to enroll people in the initial stages or whether we use it later to kind of spur their imagination in terms of potential uses for PV.
Yeah.
We don't know yet, but it will play a role.
Okay.
So, and it should be a really nice
tangible
thing
visual thing.
It was quite a dynamic meeting last time, and I suspect the follow-up will definitely be dynamic.
It's here in the centre of Sheffield, is it?
It's in the architecture building, so it's halfway at the Arts Tower. It's actually quite very well lit.
It's a nice,
quite
big
noisy space, but I think it would be okay.
And the arts has recently been refurbished, so
yeah, it's
very
nice
design.
Yeah,
not been there since it's been refurbished. But
And they've got this kind of open plan space in which they work in a, as a project team. So it would be quite difficult to, for us to film that, I think, with just a handy cam. But
yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, professional crew could do it. Okay.
So we need to know a kind of cost on that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. All right, we can come back to you on that very soon.
That would be great, I think.
Anderson thinks it's the end of Jan, that meeting.
Beginning of February. I mean, we can plan it to whenever, but the sooner the better from their point of view, I would have thought.
I might start feeding stuff into you piecemeal. Just to
That's okay, because that's fine.
Are you happy just to get some proposals as sort of short emails, a couple of bullet points? Do you want me to set up?
Just email it, and when I want to proper plan, I'll ask for that. And in the university, there are kind of tender limits, £2,000 to 20, I think. Over 20, definitely got to get three quotes. Above two, well, I should get three quotes, but I can probably argue.
So say that again. To a certain extent. Under 20.
Well, so 2,000 is the first limit. You're supposed to get three quotes for anything over £2,000.
Right.
I can sometimes negotiate that. As the only person that can deliver a certain service. Or
sole source justification.
Yeah. Yeah, and then at 20,000 we definitely need it, needs to go to tender.
So does that include accumulation across a number
of things? No, if I order for something specifically different, then I can get around that. So building up in blocks of £1,995 is kind of the best way to do it, because there's no questions.
That's fine.
I mean, it's a practical thing, and it may be that can't be done all the time, but if...
Yeah.
A training day was each day, I don't know, well, and obviously the different projects can purchase order to you as well, that's another way to break it down.
Yeah. Okay.
And our existing relationship with the university and the KTO films, does that...
That would help, definitely, because Rich has been through a tender process in certain cases anyway, so we can build on that and use that as justification.
We are still doing that work as well. Yeah.
So that will be one way to justify, but as soon as we go above 20,000, that doesn't work anymore.
That's fine. I mean, there'll be very few things that would be above 20,000. I would thought the only things would be the actual main films.
Film itself,
Okay. Excellent. I'll come back to you soon.
Cool.
Very exciting.
Thank you
for explaining it to us.
You said earlier on in the meeting, Chris, that in many ways some of the things you want to achieve here are well for us. I mean, it could be a really profoundly impactful...
That's another reason why we really need interview, because what we need is also a creative kind of input.
Yeah.
People who can actually see the stories the way that we can.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it does seem to me that most communication of science doesn't explore the process at all. It simply is a documentary after the event of how wonderful and amazing it is. And while we want to make it sound wonderful and amazing, we want it to be
focus
real.
On the process,
and the people in the process.
It's the process that's supposed to come out as well.
I think
it's an interesting bit, not the
what
achievement.
What's tumbled out today that I hadn't appreciated before, I think, is this unique and somewhat intimate connection between, as I said before, I think the person who made this and the participant who will be testing it. And that revelation, as I think I said, also mentioned that it was made by a person and not a machine, and that's really beautiful, I think, and something really that is unique about this.
When particularly around to South Asia as well, and to Bangladesh, a country.
When Nikki first saw these things, she kind of held them in her hand and said, "Oh, I wonder how a council housing resident's going to view that. They're going to think it's a little trinket that it's a bit of, they'd want to put it on the shelf and display it or whatever." And we're going to give them a little bit of testing hardware to put it on the roof and measure how well it works, and it will be interesting to see whether that enough in its sense is an engagement point, or whether there needs to be something more in the wider scheme of energy security, or is this enough for them to be engaged? And it may well be that it just is enough to put that on the table, start a discussion and go, well, do you fancy testing a few of these for us? Because
And what's lovely about it, which we're so disconnected with today, is whenever you buy anything, you don't know who made it. Our grandparents would have done probably, but we don't know today. And this is from food, where you shop and you don't have a personal relationship with the person who either killed the animal or cut it up or grew the vegetable. And that I think for me is what's thrilling about this. There was a series that the BBC have done a couple of series of now called How to Build, where their engineering series and one of the most charming ones was meeting the people that made the individual elements in a Rolls-Royce Trent engine. You met the man that cast the turbine blade that had to exceed 3 million tons of pull on it and whatever. But you never met the passenger.
Okay, so...
And what you're doing here is you're introducing the passenger to the person who made the engine that's flown them across.
It's even better than that. The person that made the polymer that is the active layer sits in the chemistry department.
Right.
The person that... I know the guy who etched the ITO glass, he lives in Sweden, but we could go and meet him.
Yeah.
The only person I don't know is the person that made the glass substrate itself and deposited the ITO.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know the person who made these legs.
Well, I tell you what, and this would end up in Wired magazine, I guarantee it. If you could find those people, and even perhaps the person that mined the silicon in the, you know, from the sand deposits, well, you know, that made the glass, and you line them all up for a photo shoot. Here's your team that delivered your energy, and here's the participant. You know, in the middle, saying, you know, this powered my TV.
It's not going to power.
No, of course. No, that's further down the path. But this is the process that gets you that energy, that makes your 21st century life possible.
We need to find the guy who made the glass, and then we're cooking.
You are. You absolutely are. And that path, seriously, that manufacturing path from the R&D science through to a final product, it's completely invisible. And one of your USPs, your unique selling points about this is holding a magnifying glass up to it and saying, look, these are all the people, the talents and the inspiration, the creativity that made this.
I think there may also be a subset. I mean, it would be good to research where in Bangladesh you're going to go, but as I was just saying, Dan, you know, Bangladesh is a country of makers and craftspeople, and so is this city.
Mm.
And maybe there's something there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. Yeah. I mean, they're less removed from the manufacturing process in developing...
And actually creating a technology that they can manufacture in their backyard is something which might turn out from the... That's what we have to focus on in the lab here, is materials and processes that can be done
in
the infrastructure of Bangladesh. That could be really, really critical.
Yeah.
And that's why it's possibly more exciting to engage in Bangladesh than it is in Sheffield.
Yeah,
we shouldn't,
But
I'm always very cautious of that, because it's so much easier to just go somewhere you don't know and it's all kind of fuzzy and nice and exotic and interesting.
But it could be hardcore.
Well, you know, are you a fan of Kevin MacDonald, the architect? He's on television a lot. He does grand designs.
Yeah, Kevin MacLeod.
MacDonald, he's the director. And Kevin did a two-parter last year.
From Slums of Bombay.
Slums of Bombay, where he went and he extracted good community practices from what from the surface would appear to be a horrible place to live, but in fact when you got in under its skin was a far nicer place to live than most Western cities.
No, but what was most important about the programme there, if they just left it at that, then I would have balked at it. What was actually most important is that he didn't balk at all from expressing his horror at how awful it is. So there was no attempt to sort of wash over the fact that it's an awful environment, that nobody should have to live that way. But he was also sort of highlighting what lessons can be learned in terms of building communities and how infrastructure should be something much more...
Yeah.
Could he go... Some guy was running a business out of the back on some second floor building in the slums, and it was actually really, really successful. He was really rich, but he didn't want to move his...
That's right.
Yeah, there were elements of that. His argument was, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. When you bulldoze this community, keep some of the design features of it. And what the equivalent of here is that some of the relationship that in Bangladesh you have with the people that make the things that you use every day should somehow be bigged up here, frankly, you know. And this is what, in part, this is about a little bit, you know.
Yeah, the whole of the commodity story is very big in social science, and wondering how, well, it is the very common narrative now in a lot of documentary making, isn't it?
What's that? The
follow the thing, the follow the object and how it's made and the different... Or maybe I'm wrong, because I'm not really...
Yeah, a little bit.
There is a sort of format that has emerged. But
a little bit.
Know,
but the full path through to that consumer or participant, as you say, isn't... I don't remember that ever being joined up in this sort of rather complete sense. I think that's quite unique.
Okay, that's great.
In a good, very good way. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Thank you for your time explaining all
that. Thanks for coming, that's really great.
I know, it's a pleasure. It's a great pleasure. Anna, I just suppose I could ask a favour of you.
Of course.
Because you mentioned Polish earlier. I made a film about Yuri Gagarin last year for the 50th anniversary, which involved working with the astronauts on the space station for a year to recreate his film. We filmed the whole thing again.
Okay.
And edited the new pictures with his original voice recordings. Mm-hmm. And this was for April last year for the 50th anniversary. But in April this year, we're releasing the film in 30 languages. And I'm just hoping to get the Polish version in today or tomorrow. And I'm desperately looking for proofreaders in each language that could just tell me there's no swear words in these things, because it's all been crowdsourced. And these aren't professional translators, they're all fans of the film that have done it.
I'd be very interested to do that.
Exception. It's 2,000 words, and it would just involve a quick look through. I'd send you a spreadsheet hopefully later in the week. Is that all right?
That would be great. Would you like my email?
Yes, please. Yeah, well, let me give you a card as well.
I don't have
Is that movie First Flight, First Orbit?
His first, yeah, First Orbit, that's what it's called, yeah. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. I was expecting something more action feel, but I mean, so, like, it was like a real space for, like, everything's under control, but...
Yeah, well, it's what he said. I mean, no one had heard that audio. We spent a year trying to get it out of the Russian state archive. It had never been released in 50 years, and we were expecting all sorts of curious things he would have said or that had been censored.
And he just said it's all right.
He's just excited about the weightlessness, the view of the Earth, and all everything is kind of normal and to do with his training. But still hearing the words of the first man to see the Earth from space for the first time is as powerful as Armstrong's first words, and no one ever knew what he'd said, so that was why we did it. And to answer your question, it wasn't supposed to be kind of dramatic and exciting.
No,
I was
amazed because I mean, he sounded like very businesslike. Like it was just like not different than the training missions. I mean, he wasn't like yelling and screaming. It was like a professional. It was
they're test pilots. Then if you listen to what the moonwalkers say, they're the same. They're cool and calculated and in control the whole time. Otherwise, they would have died previously in test flights where they had to stay calm. And that was. The common misconception was their emotions had been trained out of them, and that wasn't true. They were simply trained to survive as technical engineers at the controls, and Gagarin was the same, you know. But it's easy to read that as it was kind of mundane, but it absolutely wasn't, you know. Mm-hmm. He didn't think he'd come back.
Great, I'll send you my email then.
Thank you very much, Anna.
No
That's
problem.
Just very kind
my
of
pleasure.
You. Yeah, thank you. I don't know many Polish speakers that could help, but my ears... You said it, so thank you. Very kind of you. Thanks a lot.
Great.
Okay.
Brilliant.
It's a nice clay, isn't it?
Are we heading back to the car, right?
Are you off? Can I just talk to you?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks very much.
Cool.
Thank you soon.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Nice. So nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Really lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
To plan with you like this. Yeah.
Your name, Ravi?
Ravi, yeah.
Chris.
Right.
Yes. Thanks so much, Anna.
Take care.
Well, yes.
Oh, see you. That's
bye.
Right.
Yeah. Bye bye.
This was. No, this is like a lot of data moving around. So, are we gonna be like the data feeders into the website? Because like for like these meta tags, I mean, I think you must remember like right away when you did it, like you did this recording and you need to record it, or efficiency for device series one, or
I think the way I see it working is that we'd have an upload tool of a file, and we'd actually add a little comment to that as we uploaded it, and then it would be curated from that commentary and what the material was. So we would have to add a little bit of detail, and then it would go into a to be sorted folder, and then it would go from the TB sorted folder into the archive folder.
Yeah, I think that's
it. And we'd need to set up those file structures and databases that look after that. Yeah.
Christopher is certainly a very, what do I want to say? He's got this thing about him that you can't stop listening to him. He's a very good storyteller, very enchanting.
Yes.
I was amazed when I was so recreating the creation from the device.
He's really enthusiastic about it, and I think that has to help that he is enthusiastic about it if he's producing it, because he could also be in the film.
Well, obviously, they're selling themselves here as well.
Of course they are, but I think you can check. You can see immediately that Ravi's the traditional
the calculator.
The CEO, and Chris is like the creator. And you can see that he's enthusiastic. Immediately when we started talking about devices and processes, he was like, I want to be involved in that. And
I like this. They definitely went into the kind of format that we were thinking about immediately, which was a relief, considering the conversation that we had yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's fine. That seems like a really good idea.
So we'll certainly go with them for a training session
of
hardware. Obviously, nice people, and you can get in touch with them. The company's not so big that it's stumbling around itself. And
shall we use them for the storage capacity, do you think?
Well, we find our storage, we hopefully use their front end.
Yeah, sorry, the front end and the software.
Yeah, I think we'll just virtually just go with that.
Yeah,
but
I really liked that self-managing web page.
And when Lisa comes back on board, her skills here, absolutely perfect.
Okay,
so
great.
She won't have any trouble just picking that up and flying with it.
Okay.
I mean, it's not an issue.
Great.
But it is an issue until she gets back in October. And I don't want to make her a web administrator either, but I just know that her ability in that area is basically professional.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll make that very efficient process.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'll wait for his stuff, but we'll, and there's three things to probably PO from: the training session, which has to include the font,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the filming of the next meeting with the architects, filming of the next management meeting.
Yeah, and then after the training, hopefully, I was thinking the first thing that we should do is me have a tour of the lab and you teach me how to do this. And
think,
this all
yeah,
should be filmed
yeah, definitely,
in a good,
definitely.
Very good
yeah,
quality,
yeah.
very kind of professional
mm-hmm.
setup.
Yeah.
So when we get that set up, I wouldn't want to do that before there is somebody there to
film it.
Film
no, it.
It
wants to be, we want some kind of virgin material, don't we, basically?
Yeah.
And there's probably some light debate style conversations to have within the team as well, and that should be filmed.
Yeah. Very good.
Cool, good
so
stuff.
What do you think about this all, Jose?
Interesting. Well, are you so concerned? Well, I think concerned regarding whether like, the filming process or like or the capture of the conversation does actually have an influence on the discussion, on like the level of discussion, or maybe people be a bit more guarded of like trying to be as polite. You want to think of the long term because it's going to be safe for posterity. Maybe they want to try to, I know, when you're having a discussion about recording, you can try to explore the edges of your opinions, but if you're somebody's recording, you try to be as polite.
I think
as
quite quickly we'll learn that. Yeah, I think we'll maybe dip a little bit to start with, and then return to our.
I think
normal
so. It's
level.
Not feasible to keep self-censorship going for 3 years.
Yeah, I think. Mm. But I totally agree with your issue. But that doesn't matter. I don't think.
Sure, well, I think the rest is technical. I mean, just get permission, we're going to install the cameras in the crotto and the lab, and where people from the my office agree to, even just in the background, be, they have to learn to tell them before I hit like the record button, the set button, in the camera.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great.
All right, brilliant. Cheers.
Very good.
Cool.